Musician and producer, founder of Famous Stars and Straps, and longtime friend of the Kevin and Bean Show, Travis Barker, joins us in studio on K-Rock right now. Hey, Trav, what's going on, man?
Well, that was the best introduction I've ever had in my life. That was awesome.
Well, heads up for DJ Omar Khan, who did that. Yeah, he does good work.
He killed it.
Travis is here. Of all the times we've had you, this is the first time we've been able to introduce you as an author. The book is called Can I Say Living Large, Cheating Death, and Drums, Drums, Drums. It is available today at all book retailers. Get your ass down to wherever you buy books or online wherever you buy books and get a copy of this book because it is fascinating. Travis, what made you write a book?
You know, after my accident, you know, I'd been hit up a couple times to talk to different people or even the possibility of writing a book. And for so long, it was like a Band-Aid. I just wasn't ready to take off. And it just, you know, it came to a time where I was good. You know, I was sober. I wasn't battling some of the demons that I was battling right after the accident. And the time came where I actually started thinking about it. And then I met with Gavin Edwards, who was like a Rolling Stone journalist and had went to Iraq with us. And then that brought a whole different idea to my head because he's so rooted in music. And it wouldn't be like I'm sitting with someone trying to explain to them who I am. This right. guy had such a great idea of who I was because he spent so much time with me, you know. And I met with him and it was kind of awesome.
You felt it.
Yeah, it was kind of awesome. I was just like, if anything, it was scary because my comfort level with him was so great, you know.
Well, and we definitely do want to talk about the chapters on the accident and your recovery, which were just, hard to read with what you went through. But I want to start back at the beginning because this is the stuff that I didn't know about you that I was so interested in the book, about the way you grew up. You were a juvenile delinquent, Travis.
Yeah, a bit.
and I was so fascinated by this because your parents were great. Your parents seemed so loving and so involved and so into you and so supportive of you, yet you turned out so bad as a kid. What do you suppose that was about with all of the vandalism and all of the shoplifting and the drinking and all the bad choices that you made? Why do you suppose you were such a rough kid when you came from such a good whole family?
I mean, yeah, I had the best parents in the world, so supportive and great, and you know, I think they did a good job, but I think I was always trying to test the boundaries. I was always trying to see exactly how much I could get away with.
It was fascinating that you said that your mom used to sit on your drum lessons and record them.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, wow, I don't know of another mom that doesn't want to get out of the house when the kid's playing drums.
I know.
Learning to play drums.
Yeah, it's usually the opposite. Like, my dad would drive us. And sometimes it was far, you know. He would drive us. We would listen to Buck Owens and Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash in the car. When we got there, I mean, by the time when my mom passed away, she was as good as a drummer as I was.
Is that right?
Because she had learned pretty much anything that I had learned. So if I wasn't paying attention or, you know, whatever, she had pretty much was like a sponge and kind of absorbed it all too. So if I got home and I was like, I don't know how to do this, she could help me. And they were really... You know, I said it the other day, you know, they were really, you know, very disciplined with, like, you know, you've got to practice X amount of time a day or you can't go outside. And I think that that really helped me. I think as, like, kids, you know, you got to find something they're good at and mm-hmm. it helps their confidence. And drumming was definitely mine because I had spent so much time, you know, playing.
You sort of discovered it by seeing Animal.
Yeah, yeah. Some people, you know, grew up... Even nowadays, whatever, seeing whoever, who would it be, myself or Tommy Lee or whoever, like, mine wasn't a person. It wasn't a human drummer. It was Animal, you know, because the Muppets were so huge right then. So my first glimpse of a drummer was Animal, and I was hooked.
Like, Allie, you getting all the feels right now?
Heard
about
me,
the Muppets? Allie's first love was Fozzie.
Yeah, really? He was my first
so
crush.
Have something in common.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel you on this.
So I was running around the house, like, eating cymbals and imitating Animal, you know?
Yeah.
That was me.
How long did you try to eat the cymbals, Travis?
Probably until I lost all my teeth. It was uncomfortable. But no, I mean, that was everything. So for a lot of people that didn't know that, like, being able to battle Animal years back on Jimmy Kimmel was like, you know.
One of the highlights of your life.
Yeah, easily.
You talk about how young you were when you fell in love with the drums. And when I read this book, I thought, here's a guy who was put on this earth for one thing only, and that is to play the drums. Do you even have the earliest memory, or what have you been told about when people knew that that was your thing?
My mom called it. When I was playing Pots and Pans, like, she turned to my dad one day and was like, he does this for hours. Like, he's going to be a drummer. I guarantee it. And then...
Are you positive she wasn't saying, is there something wrong with this?
Yeah, is there something we could do with him? I think that's how I occupied myself. You know, my sisters were into dancing and singing, and I would just sit around and play Pots and Pans. And then they bought me, oddly enough, a Muppet drum kit, Animal drum kit. And then I played that forever. Like, I was taking lessons and learning how to read music on this Animal drum kit, you know?
It's all you ever wanted to do with your whole life as a career, right, is play drums.
Yeah, as kids, like, you know, I talk about it in the book as well. Like, you know, every year my mom would have me fill out this paper and this binder, and it would say, like, what do you want to be when you get older? And I never flipped it and said superhero or fireman or
Yeah, because most of us change a lot.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
I want to be a fireman, I want to be an astronaut, I want to play in the NBA.
Mine was drummer every year. Sometimes skateboarder was right next to it as I got older because I was obsessed with skateboarding, but drums was, that was my everything. That's all I wanted to do.
Travis Barker's here. Again, we're talking about his book that's available finally today called Can I Say Living Large, Cheating Death, and Drums, Drums, Drums. All right, so you knew drums was your thing, and you knew that's what you wanted to do for a living. I was fascinated, and you told us this story before, but when I read in the book, it really hit home about how you intentionally got rid of any possibility of getting real, quote-unquote, work so that you'd have to find work as a drummer, which is what you wanted to do, and that's part of why you ended up tattooing your whole body, right?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, my dad had said, like, you know, you're coming home with all these tattoos. You know, you're going to pigeonhole yourself into never having a plan B. And these are job stoppers. Like, no one's going to hire you like that.
And he thought that was a negative.
Yeah.
And to you, that was a positive.
He
you're like,
it.
All right.
Yeah, he said it. And somehow it came to me backwards where I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So
if I get enough tattoos.
More.
Yeah, I was like, that's how I keep myself from conforming and getting a job and everything. And, you know, for me, it was very realistic because my only goal was to play drums, which is something I love, find a way to get, you know, paid enough money to eat and sleep somewhere.
And that was it, though. You didn't, like, you didn't dream of being a famous rock star or anything. It was just, I want to play drums and I just need to eat.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, it wasn't like, I want to be the most famous drummer in the world or I want $1 million. I felt guilty even dreaming so big like that. You know, mm-hmm. It was just, that's all I wanted to do. So that's, when I heard him say that, it resonated in my head, but I had flipped it. I'd flipped it on him, you know, and I was like, okay, this is perfect. I'm going to tattoo my body. I'm going to, you know, keep, yeah, obviously I love tattoos already, but I saw it like, as like, I like tattoos and this is going to keep me from ever giving myself an out.
Your dad probably walked away from that conversation going, all right, I talked him out of
it.
Nailed
it.
No more tattoos for Trav. Everything's good.
You know what's cool is he has tattoos now.
Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah, you know, it went from like, I'm going to kick your butt and I'm going to kick your butt out of the house if you ever get tattooed to you know, him having a couple of the same tattoos I do.
But that's so sweet because, I mean, he admires you. You're a role model to him now with what you've accomplished. And I think that's his way of showing you that. I mean, you always want your dad to be proud of you. And you know that your dad is, Travis. And that's got to make you feel so happy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got the best pops ever, you know?
What's your perspective on the young Travis Barker who refused to have a plan B so that he could drum for a living? As an adult, when you look at that now, do you still – I mean, obviously it worked out for you, but that can't be good advice for the kids, right?
I mean, it is and it isn't. You know, I think like some kids – I mean, you got to be determined and you got to be, you know, ready to give 110%. And if you're not, don't go and do something like that. But for me, it was like I really – you know, I didn't care if I had new clothes every week or I had the flyest car or – or whatever it was. It was like, I'm so passionate about playing music. That's all I wanted to do.
There were times you described when you were younger that you were in the not cool section of kids because you played the drums.
Yeah, I mean, in the band, you know, you're called like, you know, you march out to the field and like the football players are cool and they're calling you like nerd herd, you know? It was like, you know, so for me, I didn't mind taking on that role because I had bigger plans, you know?
I also was impressed, Travis, at how little you cared about money, and still do to this matter. I mean, you happen to have it now, but it's certainly not your driving motivation. I mean, you lived really not even paycheck to paycheck, just, you know, whatever someone would give you in some points in your life, sleeping for years at a time, basically on somebody's floor or on their futon or something like that. And it never seemed to bother you because you at night were living the dream.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing what I loved. So if that, you know, I have a point where I was in Laguna and I was staying on my friend Noel's couch, you know, and there was like, sometimes there was three or four of us staying in this little studio apartment when I was in this band called Feeble. And I look back at it, and it was honestly one of the best times of my life, like one of the happiest times of my life. I was in Laguna. I was a trash man, and I was playing in a band I absolutely loved. So it was like I didn't have no money, but money didn't really make me happy.
This is a good thing to bring up, too, because every time you tell a story like that in your book, you have them write about, and your sisters write, and your dad writes, and everybody's sort of this point counterpoint to what you're saying, and it's really interesting that way.
Yeah, I've like read so many books where I'm like wondering if it's all BS, and you know, I always think like I wish like a book could make eye contact so I know if they're lying. You know, so for my book, it was really important. I had like interviews from everyone, so you know what I was saying was real, and sometimes you even, you know, they might even say something humiliating about me, but you know, that's the part of writing a book, you know, being honest and kind of putting those chapters of my life behind me.
I'm glad you brought that up, Kevin, because, Travis tells a story, but you also hear from ex-wives, you hear from members of, you know, Transplants and from Blink and from the Aquabats and all the other people that you work with. You hear from ex-roommates and friends and family members. I mean, it really is a total package of what your life has been to up to this point. And what a fascinating life it has been. Travis Barker is here. The book is available now everywhere called Can I Say? Living Large, Cheating Death, and Drums, Drums, Drums. A quick break. More with Travis right after this on K-Rock. This morning on the Kevin and Bean Show, we are giving the drummer some. Our friend Travis Barker is here. His book is out today called Can I Say? Living Large, Cheating Death, and Drums, Drums, Drums. Travis, you know you're doing an in-store tonight at the Barnes & Noble at the Grove. You know that?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Wait, you're checking with him if he knows that?
Just want to make sure, man. He's got a busy schedule. It is a wristbanded signing, and Barnes & Noble at the Grove is going to be handing out wristbands at 9 o'clock this morning when you buy Travis's book, Can I Say? And then you get a place in line to meet Travis and get an autograph tonight at 7 o'clock. You can get the info for that at travisbarker.com. All right. Wow. Where do we want to go next? You've had such a long and interesting life. How do you feel almost turning 40, by the way, Travis, for a guy who has thought his whole life that he wasn't going to live to be 20 and then wasn't going to live to be 30, and now you're almost 40? How does that make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, the 27 was, that's the magic, you know, that's that age. I was, you have no idea when I passed that one. I was really,
you always
happy.
Thought that it was just that's the number.
Yeah, I mean, before I had kids, I really lived for the day. I didn't really worry about the consequences of anything I did the day before. But now it feels, I mean, I've had such, I'm blessed, man. I've had a career beyond anything I ever expected, you know, in multiple genres, and I have two beautiful children, you know. I have no complaints. If the next 40 years is this great, I'm really stoked.
You've had some tremendous tragedy in your life and a tremendous amount of loss. I mean, not just what you went through with the plane crash and recovery, but losing two of your very best friends in the whole world within about a year of one another. Where do you get the strength to move on from that and have such a positive, happy attitude, do you think?
I mean, for sure it's the kids. You know, my kids were such a driving force in me recovering and staying positive. You know, first after the accident, you know, where I was like, you know, battling with survivor's guilt, you know, and, you know, burying, you know, Che and Chris, and then also two pilots, you know, that was tough. And then a year later to, you know, for my best friend to also, you know, go away, and in the, you know, the manner in which he passed away was, that was really tough, because him and I were very much each other's support system. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't a, you know, we went to therapists after the plane crash, and there was like there was no doctor or therapist we could talk to that was like, yeah, I've survived a plane crash and buried two people I love. And, you know, and it was tough. It was very much after AM passed away, it was like final destination for me. You know, I was like just kind of waiting to go. And then, you know, after a year of telling myself I'm supposed to be here, you know, I was like, you know, I'm here for a reason. After Adam passed away, I was, you know, second guessing everything again. But then, you know, I have a great support system with my children and just my career. And I just got a second chance.
How long did it take you after that accident to be able to enjoy whatever you're doing and feel like not feel guilty?
It was a little while. And I was on a lot of meds when I got home. You know, I didn't take the drugs I was taking before the plane crash because I went from being a complete dumpster to being in a hospital on morphine for 6 weeks or whatever. And that was tough, you know, and I got out and I never wanted to take – I came home with no pain medication, put it that way, you know, where I was like self-medicating myself for years. And then it wasn't until afterwards, like I was on a lot of drugs that just doctors, you know, had prescribed me, and they said – you could be on these for the rest of your life with something, you know, as traumatic as you went through. And then I had heard my uncle, I had overheard him saying like, yo, Travis is really different. He almost seems slow, you know, and I heard Skinhead Rob say it too. And then that was my like,
is that from the medication?
Yeah, it was from the medication. And I knew, you know, I've said it in other interviews. I was like, there was something different about Adam and I, when you looked at us, even if you compared a picture from before and after the accident, there was just something different in our face. Like it wasn't a physical scar or something, but we were just different people and as we should be, you know? But after I'd heard them, like I'd overheard a couple of people go like, well, we're kind of worried about Trav. I had killed every, you know, bipolar medication, any kind of medication I was on. And I just, that gave me like the strength to really snap out of it. And like, I got to bounce back. You know?
What was it like then? Going through all of this and reliving it, it had to be so emotional just writing the book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was the highest of highs in this book where Gavin Edwards and I were, like, laughing, and he laughs like a hyena. So when
I don't know anything about that.
It was so funny. It was so great. And then there was, like, the lowest of lows, you know, talking about the passing of my mom or the plane crash or, you know, the loss of friends. That was, like, there was times where I was bawling my eyes out, and he would just be like, okay, I'm going to give you 20 minutes, you know, and then you'd come back in and we'd finish. But I mean, those were all like, kind of like band-aids I never took off. I just kind of was strong, you know, it was like, get strong, Trav, don't, you know.
The very first sentence of this book is, I was on fire.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, all right, so.
Well, we're dealing with this then. We're going to get right into it. I thought that was really amazing.
Yeah, that was like Gavin's idea, you know, that was like a chapter within the book, you know, middle of the book. And he was like, I really want to start with this. It's almost like when a movie starts with almost the most, you know, the ending of the movie or
right,
the most dramatic part, and then you know, the book starts right afterwards. So, yeah.
Travis, I think people are going to be amazed if they only know a little bit of your recovery story, of how much you went through and for how long you went through it. And just, I mean, when you talk about the, you know, them peeling off your skin with the metal brush and everything like that they had to do to, you know, to make sure the skin didn't get infected and stuff. I mean, you went through torture in that recovery. There's no question you wanted to die, and who would blame you with as much as that hurt?
Yeah.
You woke up at 11 surgeries?
Yeah. I mean, I had self-medicated, and I was on so many drugs leading up to the plane crash that when I went in, they had no idea what kind of monster they were dealing with.
So your system sort of was probably used to pretty heavy drugs, and then it didn't really help. Really work when they were doing the surgeries?
They had so much trouble getting my pain meds right, you know? So I would wake up on surgeries, in the middle of surgery, swinging on people. Because I'd wake up, I wouldn't realize what was going on, and I would just be in excruciating pain, and I would see a bright light and seven people around me operating, you know. And then, you know, the Grossman Burn Center in L.A., they, you know, Peter Grossman really dialed me in and got everything right and kind of knew what he was dealing with after me waking up a couple times. But yeah, I mean, you ever see a burn survivor or whatever, it's like, it's, you know, you're scraped with a metal brush, you know, every couple days to get all the infection out of you. And it's just, yeah, I still go to the burn center and visit, you know, at Christmas time or anytime I can, because it's like, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for anyone in there, and majority of it's kids, honestly, which is even
more sad,
you know.
That's so terrible. And by the way, plane crash aside, you write in the book about all you've put your shoulders and your arms and your hands through with the way you drum. And it's a miracle you can lift your arms, much less still drum today. I mean, it really is with what you've put your body through, Travis.
Yeah. It's just something I don't even – you know, I don't even think about it. It's just something I love.
You can't
to
do. Stop, won't stop, man.
Yeah,
that's you.
Never.
So he used to glue his hands. He used to glue when they were start to come apart. He just glue them
together.
Just move right.
Right
on.
That's super glue. Them.
That's crazy.
That's what they did in World War II. When you
right,
had
but that was
moment.
In 1940 something, right? I mean, what are you doing?
All right, let's address the happiest surprise for me in the book, and that is that there's not a woman alive who hasn't had sex with Travis Barker. Now, that was my takeaway on this book, is hot and cold running chicks since you were like 11, Travis.
I know. I was bad. I was very much girl crazy. I'm still girl crazy, you know.
Oh, you're a man whore. There's no question about that. Yeah. Did you have any thoughts about, all right, I have kids who are going to be old enough to read this book in a few years, and do I want to write so much about girls just walking up off the beach and knocking on the door that I've never seen before and having sex with them? I mean, do I want to put that in the book?
I mean, it was one of the things I told Gavin. I was like, there's so many girls in this book. And he's like, it's the truth, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. I was like, so for me, it was, everything, you know, my life completely changed when I had kids, you know, my morals, like, you know, the way I, you know, I have a little girl, so I want her treated like a princess. I'm going to treat a girl now how I'd want my daughter to be treated. So obviously so much has changed, but that's the truth. You know, I say in the beginning of the book, you know, I'm not proud of everything in the book. Some of it makes my skin crawl with shame, you know.
A lot of it, you literally say and then say, I don't like myself for this, but
yeah,
this is how I lived and who I was and what I did.
I mean, I didn't do any of the interviews. Gavin did. And, you know, Gavin, you know, he's very, very strict on you. You don't change anything that was said in the interview because it's the other person's word. But, like, my buddy Brent Van, when he talks about my first bachelor party, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I was like, can we leave this out?
That you know? Was the greatest bachelor party in history.
Right, but it's the truth, and it happened. And if anyone can learn, you know, like, look, yeah, I used to be with hella girls, too many. And now, you know, you meet the right girl, and, you know, that actually, like, kind of like, how do you call it, you know, actually gets you. And that happens to me every so many years, you know, and
right,
it's just so worth it rather than... You know, it's kind of that kind of living ends up being pretty shallow, you know.
Well, when you, I will say, when you, you know, in the marriages that you've had, when you fall in love hard and you fall in love for reals. You know what I mean? I mean, you definitely loved hard.
Yeah. I mean, my first wife, Melissa, I married, you know, within 6 months of knowing her. You know, I'm very spontaneous when I like someone. I don't doubt it. I'm a Scorpio, so I'm like,
no,
and it's almost Scorpio season, people. But I'm passionate. You know, everyone around me could be telling me like, no, and I don't even hear you. Like, I'm so in the zone, you know.
All right, so this is the first half of your life.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time here, Travis. But what do you think the second half of your life is going to be like?
Awesome. I always say, I hope it's exactly like the first half. Just maybe we could take cheating death out of, you know,
yeah,
the equation.
Nobody
so
needs
many
to,
times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I've, you know, the first whatever 39 years right now have been amazing. You
mm-hmm.
know, I wouldn't change a thing. I, you know, I say no regrets, all lessons learned. You know, I wouldn't be who I am today without everything, including, you know, the plane crash or, you know, my mom passing. Obviously, I wish those things didn't happen. You know, I wish there was no loss. I wish, you know, she was still here. I wish the five people that passed away in the plane were still here. But I can't reverse any of that, and I've learned a lot. You know, it's made me who I am.
Well, this book is great. This is not some, you know, quick you know, get rich scheme that a famous person just, you know, slaps their name on to put it out there to make some bucks. I mean, this obviously you put so much thought and so much time into this, and it's so honest and so real and so fascinating. And the history of the ups and downs of Blink 182, we didn't get a chance to talk to, is so great. And your stories about famous stars and traps was amazing. I mean, you really are to be congratulated, Travis. You and Gavin have written a great book. So congratulations to you, my friend.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I really wanted to write it now, and it seems like people do it 30 years after they're relevant for like a money grab.
Yeah.
And I really treated this like an album, you know, that's very relevant. And, you know, I talk about, you know, things that happened a month ago, like recording the Anti-Mask record or whatever, recording my first single that's out right now. So it's so current. It's ridiculous.
It's great. Can I say Living Large, Cheating Death, and Drums, Drums, Drums by author Travis Barker. We'll see you soon.
Cool. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for coming.
Speaking of the great Jack White, big news announced yesterday that one of his many bands, The Dead Weather, is returning in September with a new album called Dodge and Burn. I love them. Do you like them, Allie? Dead Weather?
I love everything he does. Is that weird?
I do too.
Everything.
No, it's not weird at all. The guy does not make a false step. One of the greats, absolutely. All right, you're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show here on a Tuesday morning. We appreciate you tuning in. We are just 16 months away from the election that will make Donald Trump the next president of the United States.
Nope.
I'm personally very excited about it. I think President Trump's going to do a lot of great things. And I think so far his campaign has gotten off to an outstanding start. I think there have been very few hiccups. It's been a really kind of a flawless rollout. Smooth sailing, right? He is, all other politicians should look at how Donald Trump conducts himself and go, that's the way to get to the White House. So let's find out how Mr. Trump thinks it's going. He joins us on the phone from the campaign trail here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Donald. Welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you? I couldn't be happier about how my campaign is going.
Now, I wanted to ask you about that because there have been some people who have maybe decided not to support you based on some of your recent comments about immigration.
They are dummies and losers and lightweights.
Okay. It seems like, though, when you started talking about it, you made it sound like, and please correct me if I'm misinterpreting your words, but you made it sound like the open borders have resulted in Mexico sending us nothing but rapists and murderers.
But you forgot drug dealers.
Oh, that's right. You did say drug dealers as well. Yes.
Mexicans,
yes, sir,
are rapists, drug dealers, and criminals.
Okay.
So I'm going to build a big wall between us and Mexico and make them pay for it.
Okay, but you understand that, again, as some have pointed out, that you're painting an entire country, an entire people, with an extremely broad brush that may not be inclusive to all immigrants from Mexico to this country.
I'm not painting Mexico with that brush. I think there's a lot of great Mexican people. Unfortunately for us, they're all still in Mexico. Because the ones that come to America are rapists, drug dealers, and criminals.
Okay, but you know how absurd that is, Donald, right?
Except that they're rapists and criminals and drug dealers.
Now, didn't you say in your defense that you did talk to a Mexican waiter who was a fan of yours?
Yes. There was a Mexican waiter who said he liked what I do very much. And so that was one good Mexican who was serving me.
What about the fact that your Miss USA quit? What about the fact that NBC and Univision will no longer air the pageant because you own it? What about all of the other contestants from other Latin American countries who have dropped out, the sponsors who have dropped out? I mean, this is going to hurt your bottom line, Donald Trump.
They are afraid of me telling the truth, and they're lightweights and dummies and losers.
What about the fact the picture that went viral about your clothing line actually being manufactured in Mexico?
Now, that is a misinterpretation because it's just the suit jackets that are made in Mexico. Everything else is made in China.
Okay.
Okay. But is it your whole thing is that the U.S. is losing to the rest of the world and that we make bad trade deals and that America needs to start manufacturing things
again? The Chinese are thieves, counterfeiters, and liars.
Okay. But you're supporting their economy by having your clothes made in China and Mexico instead of in the United States. How come?
Yes, the ones there are good. The clothes makers are good. But the other ones that come to America are thieves, counterfeiters, and liars.
Okay,
any immigrants that come to America. It's not just Mexicans.
Really?
Yes. The Japanese that come to America are jaywalkers, cat burglars, and river dancers.
That doesn't even make any sense.
The Germans that come to America are art foragers, bricklayers, and Pictionary players.
Okay, you're just saying words now, Donald.
The Irish that come to America, Irish immigrants, are arms dealers, fishmongers, and pothole makers.
Really? They're pothole makers?
Yes, they go around digging potholes.
Okay, I don't think that's substantiated.
The British that come to America are ambulance chasers, confectioners, and rabble rousers.
Ooh. I like that.
The Koreans that come here are copper tubing smugglers, brine shrimp salesmen, and they're all ambidextrous.
You know,
the Italians that come here are illegal anaconda breeders, drone pilots, and barbers.
Come on, this isn't even making any sense.
The Swedes that come here from Sweden are double parkers, puppy jugglers, and slinky makers.
There's no such thing as a puppy juggler.
I know, but wouldn't that be crazy?
Congratulations to Disney Deluxe annual pass winner, who is Matthew Lopez from La Puente.
Lucky.
How about that? Your chance to win is coming up on the world famous K-Rock.
All right. Well, good. So we have our winner for the Disney Pass this hour. So we are going to clear the lines and open them right back up at 1-800-520-1067. It's time for our annual call-in topic on tell us about the time you got pepper sprayed. Great thing about our audience is most of them have been pepper sprayed for 100 years. And it's in the news right now because of an Orange County man who was arrested over the weekend. His name is Benjamin Golden. He is 32 years old. He is the guy that maybe you've seen on the viral video getting into an Uber. And he was plastered, by the way. And
yeah.
He was belligerent. And the Uber driver got to the point where the guy wouldn't help him with directions, wouldn't tell him where he was going, was just generally combative. So the Uber driver tried to kick him out of the car. He said, look, you're not going to ride with me anymore. So the passenger in the back starts batting the driver in the head. And what made this video go viral is what the Uber driver did next, which is to pull out a can of pepper spray that he kept under a seat and just spray the crap out of this guy until he left his car. It was pretty dramatic. I think we got some audio from the video.
All right, man, I gotta kick you out. You're too drunk to give me directions, man.
No, I'm not too drunk.
I'm kicking you out.
I'm giving you the directions right now.
Nope, that's it. Trip's ended.
No, I'm giving you the directions.
Trip's already ended, man.
Sir,
get out of my car, or I will call the police.
I tell you something, you all.
Bitch. You. Bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm giving you.
Yeah! Yeah! Call the police!
Yeah, you got maced, mother.
You got maced, mother effer, are words you never want to hear on your night out. So Mr. Golden, 32 years old, was taken into custody. He was booked on misdemeanor charges of public intoxication and of assaulting a taxicab operator. And by the way, he has also been banned from Uber for life.
Good, he should be.
And fired from his job as a corporate manager for Taco Bell. So that was a very expensive ride that night. He lost his job and his ability to ride in an Uber car for the rest of his life. So the last thing he expected, I mean, look, the guy was obviously in the wrong. There's no excuse for hitting the driver. The last thing
he was hitting him hard, too. It was ridiculous.
He was hitting him hard, yeah. He didn't expect the guy was going to pepper spray, though, right?
Well, I can't imagine he was, but oh well.
Oh, well, indeed.
The driver did the right thing.
Yeah, a lot of people don't see the pepper spray coming, and that's why we think it's fun. At 1-800-520-1067. You think you're just out having a good time, and the next thing you know, you're pepper sprayed. You want to take one real quick before the break? Let's try Matt. He's in Azusa. This is not the call I was expecting on line 4, but let's make this the first one, then we'll come back with everybody else at 1-800-520-1067. Matt, you were pepper sprayed. How'd that happen?
Hey, it's me.
Hey. I see
funny.
What you did there.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I was pepper sprayed, not in the conventional way, actually. My mother had a pepper spray on her keychain because she has kind of a dangerous business and travels around South Central LA and places like that.
Right.
And she left her keys one day. I must have, oh, geez, what, 14, 15 years old. And so I took the pepper spray and I went to our front garden and I sprayed our rocks just, you know, this, and I leaned in to smell it just to get kind of a, I'll just get a quarter feel of it or 10% feel of it. And it basically is like smelling the Armenian comedian's car. I've started to flood snot and tears and barking coughs.
Wait, you did that on purpose?
Yeah, I just wanted to see how it felt just a little bit. I didn't like blast myself
Matt,
in the face like
just
Johnny Knoxville.
This isn't smart.
Wow.
Matt.
Allie, you're absolutely right. It's a just the tip moment, and there's no excuse for it. Look, there's a reason. You know ahead of time that pepper spray is going to be bad. That's like saying, I wonder what it feels like a little bit to get hit by a car.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, the neighbors loved it. They saw me just
of course. That would have been the best thing I've ever seen.
No, this is before camera phones. Thank God. Otherwise, it'd be on YouTube right now.
That's such a shame.
Awesome call, sir. Always good to hear from you. 1-800-520-1067. I know our listeners have been pepper sprayed. Tell us the story. We'll talk to you next on K-Rock. Taking the calls right now on a story about you getting pepper sprayed. Come on. I know it happened to every single one of you.
Yeah, I mean, 1-800. I feel like you're not living life if you haven't been pepper sprayed once.
Right, at least once. If you're an adult, for God's sakes. 1-800-520-1067. You can also text the Kevin and Bean Show all the time, including right now on this topic at the number 2-KROQ. That's 25767. Let's go to our man Nick. He is in Hemet, and he is on line 2 here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Nick.
Hey, party people.
You got pepper sprayed. What was happening?
Oh, it was about 8 years ago. We were at a punk rock show in the Orange Pavilion. It was a huge show, bands from the UK and everywhere. And all these, it ended up being like a little mini race riot deal. And so all the cops came, and all the punk rockers were lighting trash cans on fire and stuff. And we were trying to get out of there. There was a line of like 5 of us. And the cop was just standing there on the curb and just started pepper spraying the line of us. And then this other crazy punk rocker dude ran up behind the cop and hit him in the head with a 2x4.
Oh, my God.
And then
so it was one of the better punk rock shows that year.
Yeah. I mean, there were lighting trash cans on the fire, like dumpsters, and they broke into the local Jack in the Box and all kinds of stuff. It was on the news. It was a big deal way back then.
This was, Ali, you remember, this was a DeBarge show that was out in the IE.
I don't think that's punk at all.
It just went crazy.
No, nope, right. That's not the case.
Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate that. Let's go to Andrea, Pasadena, line 7. There's something, I don't know why, maybe this isn't fair, about a girl getting pepper sprayed that doesn't seem right. Andrea, what happened?
It wasn't just me. There were like 10 of us. We were at a club, and we were upstairs, and, you know, we're drinking, we're having a good time, and all of a sudden, one of my cousins was like, I got to pee. Let's all go to the bathroom because we all go to the bathroom together.
Sure.
So we walked downstairs and literally walked into like this like full on brawl between these drunk guys, and the security guards started pepper spraying everybody. And so we like, we're like, la, 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 oh my God, ah, pepper spray. And literally got hit in the face with pepper spray. There was like 10 of us. Oh. We like roll. This was downtown. So we're like stumbling outside. They're like shoving people outside. We looked like it's worse than getting mascara in your eye. Like,
oh, slow down.
I've never gotten mascara in my eye, but it's pretty bad.
If you've ever gotten mascara in your eye, it's horrible. You can't breathe. You can't see. Our makeup was ruined. Our hair was ruined. We were like falling all over each other. Like, I mean, it's a nightclub. So we were wearing like mini skirts and heels. It was awful.
When you guys look back on that now, do you laugh about it, or does it still strike you as a horrible memory?
Kind of both.
Yeah.
Like it.
That's a good story.
Looking up and seeing all my cousins like just trashed, like eyes just red and makeup all smeared, and then. Oh, it was just bad. It's horrible. It's a horrible experience.
So great. You're saying it's good.
Good time.
Thumbs up. Thumbs up from Andrea.
Thank you, Andrea. Appreciate you listening so much. Let's go to Riley, Seal Beach. He's up next. He's on line 1 here on the Kevin Beach. You're talking about being pepper sprayed.
Hey, Riley.
Hey, what's up, guys?
You got pepper sprayed?
Yes, I did. So I was in high school, and I was walking to my car for lunch break. And I'm walking by my best friend's girlfriend's car. She's driving out. She goes, hey, Riley. I turn and look, and she thought it'd be a funny prank to pepper spray me directly in the face.
Oh, oh. No.
Yeah, and she thought it was hilarious, but she wasn't the smartest of people. And
she also wasn't the one who was getting pepper sprayed in the face. It's a lot more hilarious when you're not the victim.
Exactly. So she hits me directly in the eyes. And I immediately just throw all my stuff on the ground. I can't see anything. And one of my buddies comes over, kind of grabs me, leads me to his car. And I live like 2 blocks away from the school. And he took me home, and I get in the shower. And I just start washing it out of my face. And as I'm washing it out of my face, I like push all the pepper spray that was in my eye. And it starts running down my chest and, you know, all around my balls. And it just starts burning.
I'm listening.
It was
go on.
How, you're the only person that's managed to make it worse.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think about the pepper spray flowing all the way down my body.
That's the worst story ever.
When you got pepper sprayed in the face, that wasn't the worst part of your day.
That was the best part of that night was when you got pepper sprayed.
Oh, it was absolutely horrible.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I go back to school the next period.
Oh, you don't end then. Yeah, you can't end then after you've already got your testicles on fire. Riley, yeah. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the call.
Kevin Amelister Chance writes in, hey, has Beer Mug been pepper sprayed yet? If not, I think you guys need to make that happen. And be sure to Instagram, Vine it, Periscope it, etc. Get on it, boys. That's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
We talk about pepper spray all the time. We very rarely use the pepper spray.
Yeah, let's run that past the lawyers. I'm sure they'll be good with it. They like that kind of stuff.
You don't run it by them. They'll find it funny.
Hey,
That's a given.
If you've become bored with beautiful landscape photos posted all over the internet, this Huffington Post article begins, why not liven them up with some tasteful nutsacks? Nutscapes is a weirdly stunning collection of crowdsourced landscapes embellished with just a touch of male gonads. Kevin, why have you not gone out and nutscaped yet? This is like right up your alley.
This is one of those things where you just go, who was the first person to think, I'm going to take a picture of that beautiful lake and mountain? But at the very top of the picture, I need a little of ball. I need a little ball. Who said that first? Because they're a hero.
Are not blatantly not safe for work. Rather, they show shadowy images of gangly balls dangling in front of mountains, beaches, and historic sites. It does make me want to get my car and drive to Mount Rushmore, like, immediately, just so I can take that photograph. I believe Nutscapes has great artistic depth because it touches upon both a lowbrow vulgarity and a highbrow concept, says one of the project founders, Clancy Philbrick. Simply, testies are funny. They always have been. They always will be. They add humor to subject matter, landscape photography that is typically a little dry. So we wanted to find out more about nutscaping, why we're doing it, how we're supposed to do it, and everything we need to know on the topic. And we were able to track down, believe it or not, our producer, Dave the King of Mexico, found a nutscape artist who is named Claudio Bolatis, and he joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hi, Mr. Bolatis. Thanks so much for coming on.
Please call me Claudio.
Claudio. Okay.
Yes, don't need to be so formal.
Okay. I don't need to be so formal. Okay.
No, you
okay.
have no need to be so formal
okay.
with me.
Right. So you are.
We all can be friends.
Okay.
Certainly.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll decide that, though.
So you are already with the hostility. Not enjoying this so far, I'll tell you that much.
Well, let's hit the reset button and let's all try to get along because we are fascinated with what you are into, which is nutscaping.
Please would not be using that name.
Don't use that name.
Nutscaping. It's so juvenile and not artistic at all.
Okay,
well,
what should we call it?
Isn't that what you're doing?
I am the creator of this art farm, and now it has been co-opted by all these people saying all these things, nutscaping.
Okay, so what is it?
I call it scrotography.
Well, I don't know why that didn't catch on.
That's what it is. I am created, so I know. It's my name. I gave it.
Now, the first time you did this, what were you trying to achieve here?
Well, it was a particular moment in time when I was in hiking in the hills above my home, and I was in the wilderness, and I had to relieve my nature's duty.
Okay.
And my pants were down.
Right.
Around my ankle.
Okay. Right. We know how that works.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know how you have to take pants off for your nature's duty?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we understand.
Too much time setting up this part of the story, Claudio.
Well, I want you to understand the process.
Yes.
And I was crouching and looking from between my legs, and I saw the beautiful vista there, and I said, I must capture it.
Sure.
So I took out my camera, and I pointed the camera between legs at beautiful vista, and just a touch, just a hint of scrotum appear. And I say, that is so beautiful. Because there are mountains around, and then my own twin mountains also there, and they're together in one frame.
Okay, but my initial thought would have been, I need to crop that out.
Well, maybe you don't have beautiful testes, but I have some beautiful testes.
Okay.
And I said, the beautiful body, the human body is so beautiful. I must have including in my picture. So I have it all together, one picture, and I go, snap. Just like that, snap.
Right.
And I take picture, and I look, and I go, look at my beautiful testes.
Okay.
And then everyone do it because it's beautiful.
That sounds like it was quite a moment for
it
you.
It was. It was like discovering electricity, only I discovered my balls.
Right. Similar.
Now, was it just that one photo that started the whole thing? Or
no,
you know?
I start taking pictures everywhere.
I see.
Putting my sack in the picture.
Right.
And I had to quit my job, which was taking photographs of students in elementary school.
Oh, no. Those two things should never go together, Claudia.
I started to include them in class pictures.
Nope.
No.
And
sir,
I would just bend over and shoot between my legs.
No, sir.
For the school children.
Nope.
And I lost that job.
Yeah.
Weird.
Hard to believe.
Yeah.
There's
some parents complaining.
Yeah.
Why
well,
are there two balls on my kid's head?
Come on. Well, it's good that you got out when you
and
did.
Now I just do landscape and passports.
And what?
If you need a passport photo, I can do it for you. But it looks like you're wearing a beret.
I want one of those so bad.
Has this ever happened to you, Kevin? You've had like a great idea, $1 million idea, life-changing idea, and you thought, I'm so going to do that. And then somebody swoops in and just does it like right out from under you.
No, that's never happened to me, Bean. Has it happened to you?
As a matter of fact, Kevin, this weekend I was thinking, why can't I combine my love and talent for freestyle motocross with my love of the ocean? Why can't I go out there and ride a motorcycle on the water? And I was just thinking about doing that next weekend.
Yeah.
And then stupid Robbie Madison, he does it. He breaks the internet with his video called Pipe Dream that you can see at RobbieMadison.com or at KROQ.com. And we welcome Mr. Madison to the Kevin Beach on KROQ right now. Hey, Robbie, how are you?
Good, thanks, Josh. Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. You are incredible. Before we talk about the recent events in Tahiti, just tell folks a little bit about you, some of the sorts of things that you've done in the past.
I think the most notable thing is I doubled James Bond recently in the latest film, Skyfall, did all the motorbike scenes for him, and then I've been a Red Bull athlete and done the Red Bull X Fighters for some years and competed on X Games and stuff like that, so I'm one of those guys.
And you've been a surfer your whole life.
I have, yeah. I grew up surfing on the east coast of Australia as a kid and moved out to the U.S. 10 years ago, and I've missed the ocean, and it's been calling my name, and it finally got me back.
Now, Robbie, let me ask you a question about the beginning of this. When you thought, hey, I should combine my love of motorcycles in the ocean, why didn't you follow that up with, no, that would be stupid, it wouldn't work?
I don't know. I just... you know, in this day and age, you just got to try. You got to follow your heart, and I don't know why. I don't know why I got so fixated on it, but it was just an idea that I couldn't let go, and I wanted to try it. And luckily, the folks down at Lake Elsinore, at the city there, are just so cool, and they let me practice this in the channel, and I proved that it could work. And then it was only a matter of time I had to take it to the ocean.
What were the early attempts like when you first started putting a bike into the water? I would imagine you sunk the first few times you tried it just while you were trying to get the thing going, right?
Yeah, that was so interesting. The very first time I came down and hit the water and lost control and went flying back up onto the land and nearly took my wife and all my mechanic and everyone else out. But shortly after that first attempt, we realized we added more surface area and we got it working within the second day. And
wow.
And from there, it's been had a lot of ups and downs. It's taken me down a couple of times, but managed to get it consistent.
What do you call what you put under the wheels on the bike when you take it into the water? Are they skis or paddles? What do you refer to them as?
Yeah, I mean, I got two sets of skis, one under the front, one under the rear, and then giant paddle tire that's custom made just on the back.
I have so many questions. I don't know. Because when you watch it, you're literally surfing on a motorcycle, and it just seems like no matter what you put on there,
be too much weight or something.
It would be too much. Yeah, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. I think the main thing for me that was important, I just didn't want to get the backlash of people, you know, being having a point to say about, you know, harming the environment or wrecking the ocean or damaging animals or anything like that. So we went above and beyond to make sure the bike was totally sealed. The only thing that could happen when the bike went in the water is the water could get into the engine. There was no chance of gasoline or oil getting out. So that was a good thing and something to, you know, have a free conscience moving forward with. But Yeah, there's a lot going on, and when I got to the wave, it definitely got tricky. You know, I got out in front of the wave thinking I could ride across in front of it like I was doing on the jet ski, and that totally didn't work. So there's a lot of things that I thought were going to happen that didn't, and things that I thought would be easy that weren't, and things that I thought would be hard that managed to just fall into place.
You changed to a smaller bike, right, so that you didn't have so much repair? When it hit the...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we were using the latest, you know, 450 motocrosser, which is a beautiful motorcycle, but far too expensive to be playing around with an idea like that. So we went back to the kind of the, you know, earlier models, the prehistoric kind of two strokes, which are a little bit backdated now, but a lot simpler and way easier to work on.
Now, you mentioned your wife earlier. What was her response when you said, honey, I'm thinking of doing this?
Luckily, we've been together for 10 years. She knows how weird and wild I am, and she actually likes me for who I am and not what I do, so it's all good.
So she probably just, all right, fine.
Go ahead, whatever.
I know how it goes.
Yeah, she loved it. She loved it. You know, I have the world record for the longest jump on a motorcycle, and that comes with all kinds of crazy risks, and she thought water's a lot softer, and she has she used to be a professional wakeboarder, so she's familiar with the waterside background, so she actually had a lot of good input that made this thing work.
That's nice. Great. This is the voice of Robbie Madison here on the Kevin DeBeach Show. He's a professional freestyle motocross rider. We're talking about his video that's all – it blew up the internet over the past few days. It's called Pipe Dream. See it at Robbie's site or at krock.com. Had anyone ever attempted anything like this before you did, Robbie?
Yeah, there has been. You know, there's – back when I was a kid, the Crusty Demons of Dirt was huge videos. And a friend of mine, Brian Manley, has seen one of the early ones where he rides across the water. And that right there, I remember as a kid watching that. I couldn't believe it, and so that definitely was an inspiration for me. But there's been guys in the past, you know, I've seen guys on like Top Gear try to ride motorcycles on the water, and you know, the Nitro Circus guys tried it, and a lot of people have definitely played with the concept, but no one's thought to add the second ski on there. And it wasn't until I really got into this that I started going around and researching and looking for other people who had tried it, because I thought, hang on, I had the same idea. Is someone else doing this? You know, are the guys at K-Rock actually really going to do this after me? So I just wanted to make sure that no one else was onto it, and I couldn't find anyone that was playing with the idea. I'd seen that people had played with the one ski, and but yeah, definitely took it to the next level, and I was just I really wanted to get it out before any much time passed, because I just thought it's only a matter of time before someone hears about this, sees about it, or comes up with the same concept and beats me to the punch.
Right. How solid is it? Can you go out and do it every time, or is it still very risky?
It's pretty good. It's definitely condition conscious. You know, if it's too windy or too rough, it's probably not going to work the best. But now that it's to this stage and it has this most popularity, it's such a great thing for me, because I can talk about it without being laughed at or taken as a fool. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks I can get the couple of changes done to it to make it more consistent. I know exactly what it needs, and I'm looking forward to giving it what it needs so I can go out there and get that barrel that I've been looking for.
Amazing. All right, we're almost out of time here, Robbie. I have to ask this. So you're out in Tahiti where you filmed this Pipe Dream video. That wave, how big was that wave that basically swallowed you up, but yet you still somehow managed to stay up on the bike?
Well, I can confidently say the face of it was 20 feet. I don't know how the surfers measure it. But it was a big one. It definitely held me down for a long time. And I'm just so glad that the guys at DC Shoes had the safety crew in place. And Ray Mana, who's a legendary surfer from Tahiti, he had all his guys on point. And, it had to be somewhere between 15 to 20 feet tall for sure.
Unbelievable. I mean, when that wave comes down on you, you're missing from the frame for a minute. And I'm like, is he ever coming back up? And then you just come riding right out of it. I mean, it's just amazing. Although I will say that if I had been there on the crew and you had gotten back to the boat, I would have told you, oh, we didn't film that one, mate. Just to be funny. Just to be funny. Yeah, just as a joke. Unbelievable. It sounds like you worked on this for a long time, and it just must feel so good to have it done and have it out there. And, you know, you've done so many incredible things in your career, but this video is something I think you're always going to look back on and just smile about.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm blessed, and I can't wait for the behind the scenes to come out. There's a great story to be told here, and the last scene there where I looks like I come out, I don't really come out. There's a lot. I go down there for about 4 minutes. We go missing. It's a massive panic, but I make it back. So it's definitely the behind the scenes is going to be a very cool story. I can't wait to see it.
Can't wait as well. Pipe Dream is the name of the video if you want to check it out at robbiemadison.com, or we put it up at krock.com as well. Robbie, thanks so much for the time. We enjoyed talking to you, sir.
Cheers, guys. I'm best.
So we have Jim Rome on the way. We have Adam Carolla with This Week in Rage and a bunch of other stuff. But right now I want to talk about this preacher that we highlighted yesterday. His name is Reverend Creflo Dollar. And he's asking people for money because he needs a state-of-the-art private plane, a jet, that costs $60 million. He needs that for his ministry.
We have offices on multiple continents, and our ministry stretches across television, personal appearances, and meeting the needs of people all over the world. So a plane is a vital part of the mission of our ministry.
Right. So everybody send money because the guy needs – it's better than a G6. We were looking it up yesterday.
Yeah. Well, he said if 200,000 people just committed to $300, he's good. How big is his ministry in Atlanta?
I don't know. I guess he's been in Atlanta for a long time, but wow. 200,000 people giving him $300.
That's a lot of people.
For a plane, you go – no. Are there other planes that don't work? But he needs his own plane. So we're trying to track down some information on the story. And we have the Reverend Ernest Sampson from the National Association of Televangelists on the line.
Good morning, Kevin and Dean. How are you?
We're good. How are you, Reverend?
I am filled with the power of the Lord. Hallelujah.
That's great.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
And to you, my son.
Now, do you know this Dr. Creflo Dollar?
Oh, I know. I am very familiar with Pastor Dollar.
Okay.
Creflo.
And your thoughts?
Creffy. Creffy, as I call
Creffy.
Him.
Sure.
That's how close we are. Mm-hmm.
And your thoughts on him needing a $60 million private plane?
I wish him all of God's grace in the achievement of this goal, because it is true. As a televangelist, I can speak from this wisdom that you do need a private plane in order to save this lost and dying world for the Lord Jesus Christ. Hallelujah.
Can you not fly on American Airlines or United or any of the existing airlines?
Of course you can, but that's not how God wants it.
Huh. And you know that?
Because God says, go forth and be not amongst those who kick the back of seats, but those who shall give you private packages of macadamia nuts and also endless refills of champagne.
I don't think that's actually a Bible verse.
Who's the preacher right now? That's what I'm asking.
All right.
Well, it's you, Reverend.
Thank you. That would be me.
Right. My question, just from the outside looking in, I'm not a member of his church.
Mm-hmm.
It seems really frivolous. It seems like maybe money could be spent elsewhere.
How?
Maybe in Atlanta.
How dare you question how the Lord works?
Well, is it the Lord?
In mysterious ways, first of all, and second of all, with a Gulf Stream. The Lord works with a Gulf Stream.
Specifically?
He loves him some Gulf Streams, yes. Lord, the Lord saith unto thee,
you're gonna
go forward and stream as the Gulf does.
That's not a Bible verse.
As the Gulf shall stream, so shall thee.
Nope.
Take thee unto the stream and dip thy Gulf into it and raise it up to the heavens so that Jesus may sip of the gulf from the stream.
And that's in the book of, and the chapter, and the verse.
Book of Harvey?
What?
How?
That's a book of the Bible?
The book of how?
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 H-A-L. H-A-L.
The book of how?
How?
All right.
Chapter 72 and verse 8.
I don't think so.
Well, you have a Bible?
I don't have one right here
then
right now.
You're going to have to agree that I'm right. And so the Lord saith unto man, giveth of thy money, for it is filthy paper, and you shall have in return lighter wallets for you to carry without the burden of cash unto you, I say.
Book, chapter, and verse?
You're very picky about this stuff.
Oh, well, you're quoting the quote scripture.
I'm telling you these things, and you're like, "Ooh, book chapter." I don't. It's not a history test. This is just the Word of God.
Right. But you're quoting it.
Right.
I'm just asking where you got the quote from.
Sometimes he talks, and people listen. in my ear. And I say unto you, the Lord, oh, what's that, Lord? Shut up, he says to you.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
He doesn't like you. He thinks you are a tool of Satan.
Wow.
I think you're just a tool.
Okay.
All right, look lively, everyone. Royalty in the house here at K-Rock. WWE Hall of Famer Jake the Snake Roberts has stepped into the Kevin and Bean studios. The film is called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts, and it looks amazing. Here's a piece of the trailer.
Jake the Snake.
Jake, to me, is one of the greatest talents I've ever seen.
One of the great minds in the history of the business.
You are a piece of snake. You gypsy people. You.
In the last 3 or 4 years, I didn't think I was going to have a dad around.
A month ago, you did crack.
How often do you feel like you fight it, fight the addiction?
24/7. I know this is my last.
I know it sounds sad, guys, but there's a happy ending. It's called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts. So he is here, and he is well. Hey, Jake, how are you, man? Thanks so much for joining us. You hear us okay?
Can you hear us?
I don't think he's got his headphones up.
No, I can't.
No, he can't, yeah.
There we go.
Usually we listen to Bean with it turned down, so that's what happened.
Yeah, I get that.
Well, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, sir. How are you?
Miserable, how about you?
Okay, all right.
I'm not at home. You are.
Yes. Right?
What kind of BS is that, man?
Yeah, Jake walked in and said, Bean's working from home.
Really?
If I'd have known, that was an option.
Yeah, I didn't know you were scared.
I know you have some continuing health problems, including a hip deal that you're dealing with right now.
Hip replacement, yeah.
Oh, man.
My second one. Yeah.
So sorry to hear that. Well, it's great to have you here, and we loved the movie, and you are going to be appearing along with Diamond Dallas Page at a screening of the film tonight at the Arclight in Culver City. This is a celebrity event and screening. Tickets are on sale now, but they are going very, very fast. So if you want to see the movie with the guys who are in it, and there's autographs and photo ops after the Q&A, you buy those for the night.
Steve Austin, too.
Oh, nice.
A name dropper.
Well done.
Well, Jake, we got a lot of ground we want to cover. I want to start before the movie. How did you and snakes become a thing? Where did your fascination with reptiles come from?
I hate snakes, okay?
All right. That seems unlikely.
I do. I can't stand the damn things.
Okay.
I was always terrified of them.
Uh-huh.
But maybe that's where dope started. Because I was driving down the road one night listening to some Monday Night Football back in the day. And they were talking about Kenny Stabler, God rest his soul.
Mm-hmm.
The snake, Kenny the Snake Stabler. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, man, you know, if a wrestler had a snake, you know, in a bag. Man, sorry about that.
Sorry.
Okay, that's one down, two to go. I just kind of kept rolling with that thought. And then I opened my stupid mouth and told somebody.
So your fear of the snake is what made you think everybody else would be afraid of it?
No, that's not it.
No.
I was just really high.
Okay, all right.
And I thought it was a great idea, and I opened my mouth and told somebody. Mm. They thought it was a great idea. The next thing they say is, Jake, we want you to carry a snake in the ring. I'm like, wait a minute. I know that was my idea, but it wasn't a good idea.
And couldn't you have said, all right, maybe a little garden snake?
No.
Bigger go home?
The money's there. You're going to do what you have to do.
So what kind of snakes did you bring out into the ring?
I used a lot of pythons in the beginning, but then I got really fed up with them. They were boring. And
in other words, they didn't do much when you brought them.
No, they hurt. They hurt. They really hurt.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, they bite the hell out of you, man, and their fangs are curled. So if you know, they tell you, if it bites you, don't move. Excuse me. I got a Doberman that just bit me on the butt, and I'm not going to move, right?
Yeah.
So you jerk away, and when you do it, it rips the flesh.
So you got bit a lot.
Yeah, I did. Well, several other guys got bit, too, which is a lot of fun. That's really cool.
The clip that you show in the movie, is that with Macho Man? With
yeah,
the snake?
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't a python. That was a cobra.
Yeah. And, I mean,
he just lit up
Lamar Odom should have used a cobra, you know, and he wouldn't watch that clip. I'm sorry, Lamar. I didn't mean that. God bless you. I hope you turn out all right, man. That's so horrible.
Yeah, it is.
That was Jake. That wasn't me.
Okay. So, all right. So, for instance, in the Macho Man clip, so it was okay. I mean, that was okay with the WWE at the time, for you to walk out there with a cobra and throw it on your opponent, have it bite him, and just have it latch on and not let go. And that was just okay.
That was a problem. He wouldn't let go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't know that you don't know the story before the story. See?
Okay.
I'm gonna give it to you guys.
All right. All right.
I'll even use Macho Man's voice.
Okay.
Macho Man walks into the locker room. He's like, "Okay, brother. Tonight, man, they want to hook the snake up to the Macho Man." I don't know why he always talked to himself third person. But anyway, you know, there's a lot of things going around the WWF, man. People would like to have the Macho Man spot. So, you sure that snake's cool? Yeah, man. But it's a cobra. Yeah. But it's been fixed. Hell, maybe it is and maybe it isn't. And I'm like, so he's like, "Well, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to let it bite you first."
Oh.
Oh.
In the locker room. Like, but right now, so you don't have time to do anything to it.
Okay.
So I had to pull up my pants leg and let the damn thing bite me. You know? Oh,
this is before you ever
before,
went out.
Before it went out. Away. Yeah. So I'm like, okay. And he's like, "Now I'll tell you what we're going to do now." He says, "Brother, I want this thing to really work. So once he's hooked me up to me, hooked up to me, afterwards, come back. I may want you to hook him up again because I want this thing to really work." I'm like,
"Wow,
no problem."
Wow.
So I went out there, and I'm thinking about the back now, you know. And I turned my back to him, and I got the snake out of the back, and I slapped the yeehaw out of it. So that snake opened his mouth, and he wants to kill.
Yeah.
And he latches on and would not let go. So he won't let go. I pull on it, pull on it, pull on it. Finally, they send Miss Elizabeth out. They send Piper out. God bless him. Miss Elizabeth, too. Get the snake out. I'm trying. They're like, "Now."
So they're mad at you like can control that
snake.
Yeah,
thing. Like, okay, turn the button off, right? So I finally prized mouth open. Uh-huh. But now I remember what he said to me.
Do it again.
Right. So I walk, "Do you want me to get that? Wait for me." It was pretty cool.
That is a tough way to make a living, Jake.
He ended that story with, "It was pretty cool."
Yeah. I love that. I love it. I watch that clip quite a bit.
I bet you do. What year did you retire from professional wrestling?
I haven't retired yet.
Well, what year did you stop appearing regularly?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember.
Okay. So, but you did it for 30 years or something, right?
35, 40.
35 years.
Actually, 40. Yeah.
And in the early days, it didn't pay well, did it?
No. Gosh, if you made $500, you're lucky.
Really?
What is it about wrestling that made you fall in love with it, Jake? Why did you love it so much that you would do it for 40 years of your life?
It's insane. The high you get from performing live.
In front of crowds up to 90,000 at a time.
But it doesn't matter if there's 90,000 or if there's 10.
Really?
You know, you get that rush because you're controlling people's emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to say it's masturbating people's emotions.
Right.
That's what you're doing. You're taking them up, you're taking them down, and you do it at your own discretion. Mm-hmm. To have that power over people, to go to the ring and the people are all cheering you, and then 10, 15 minutes later, you're walking out of the building and they're trying to cut you with a knife or run over you in a car.
Okay, see, to me, that's a bad experience.
No, it's not. It's a high that's unbelievable. I mean, I was walking to the ring one night in Dallas, Texas. Got in the ring, and I'm in a ring wrestling Sting. And all of a sudden, I hear bam, bam. I'm like, "That's not good." So I dive out of the ring. I go underneath the ring. Sting's in the ring going, "Woo!" You know, those baby faces are so stupid. So the cops grabbed the guy. The guy stood up ninth row, pulled out a pistol, was popping.
Wow.
Caps. They're like, "Do you want us to arrest him?" I'm like, "Oh, no, just reload that son of a bitch." Put him back out there, you know. And then a few years later, I had a 70-year-old grandmother cut me with a box cutter.
By the way, this is part of Jake's answer to why he loved wrestling.
Yeah.
The stories that he's telling right now.
But if you can make people take that extra step, go someplace they've never, ever been before. I mean, this old woman, she'd never even seen wrestling before, live.
Why would she cut you?
Because she was at home with her grandkids, and they were watching me on television. She's like, "Somebody needs to straighten that young man out." And they're like, "Oh, Grandma, hush up." You know? And she's like, "Well, if I was there, I'd show him a thing or two. Oh, Grandma, go back to your room," you know. And it hurt her.
Wow.
So she went down there to make a statement to show her grandkids, "Hey, I'm not afraid of anything."
Wow.
If I'm her grandkids.
But they got her. I mean, I was walking down there. I didn't even feel the cut. It got me on the back of the tricep. And
that is something else.
And the, it got, uh, I, I kept walking it, and all of a sudden my security's gone. I'm like, what the hell? So I turn around and look, and they're holding this old woman down. I'm like, man, what's her? She having a heart attack? And I'm like, no, man, she just cut you. I put the boots to that wench.
What is happening right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, man, what the hell's that?
There's a lot of very colorful terms being used here. I may need to go to a glossary afterwards. All right, let's take
I love wrestling.
Let's take a very quick break. Jake the Snake Roberts, WWE Hall of Famer in studio with us. Again, the film is called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts, and it is out now. It's in Culver City at the Arclight tonight. Go to ArclightCinemas.com if you want to be part of the very special screening. And I believe we're going to talk more about the documentary, and I believe your friend Dallas Page is going to be joining us on the phone as well. So we'll talk to DDP with Jake the Snake right after this on K-Rock. Wrestling legend Jake the Snake Roberts in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. JakeTheSnakeMovie.com if you want information on the documentary that is out now called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts. So the movie opens, Jake, and you are not in a great place.
I'm in a horrible place, probably pretty near death.
You're just north of 300 pounds.
Yeah, doing cocaine daily and alcohol daily and didn't really give a damn about anything, man. I was hoping to die.
That's it's so tragic and so sad. Is it fair to say that your friend Diamond Dallas Page saved your life?
Not only my life, but Scott Hall's life also.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We went down and got Scott, and he was in real bad shape, too. He was in a wheelchair.
Were you receptive when he reached out to you to getting help?
I just, you know, he approached me with it, and for a brief moment, I must have had some type of clarity, because I just said, hell with it, I'll try.
All right.
Because and then later on, I was like, man, if you don't make it this time, you're dead. You're dead.
Yeah.
And because I'd given up fighting. You know, I'd been to several rehabs. They didn't work. Come right out, and you go right back to using. It's so frustrating and so full of hate. Here's some breaking news for you. Addicts aren't having a good time. We're hating life. Yeah. We're hating ourselves.
Yep.
And we're hating everything about it. You know,
let's bring Dallas into the conversation. I'd love to hear it from his point of view. What is it you saw in Jake Dallas that made you think, I can save this one?
Well, you know, wasn't even really a thought in my head at the moment. The biggest thing was Jake was my mentor. I always say without Dusty Rhodes, there's no Diamond Dallas Page. But without Jake the Snake Roberts, I never hit the main event. I never am a three-time world champion. He took me under his wing. You know, I was 35 years old when I started wrestling, you know, so he's the only guy who believed in me enough to teach me. And for years, this would go on for years, he would mentor me. I would, even when he was out of the business, just doing independent stuff, I would come by his house and show him my tapes and he'd critique them for me. Hmm. So with the reason I got to the level I got because he helped me. And I always wanted to pay him back, but it just never, you know, didn't ever seem like the right time because he wasn't ready yet. And I just think that this, you know, I'm sure you saw the disabled veteran that I helped walk again. Did you see that?
Yes.
Yes. So
that video, I inspired one guy. He not only loses 140 pounds in 10 months, he loses the knee braces, the back brace, and the wraparound canes he walked on for 15 years to run. And you know, not just walk, but run. So I can show that to Jake. I could show that to Scott. I could show that to Chris Jericho. I could show that to guys like, look at what this guy did. You know, what could you do? So the only really goal for me at this point when talking to Jake was to try to get him going and started, and then was to help him walk away from the business with his head held high because Jake, out of the top 10 guys of all time, they're probably all interchangeable to top five guys of all time. And when I come to name my top five guys in our business, same thing with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Jake Roberts is on that list. So his whole thing, he was ostracized by the WWE. They wanted nothing to do with the drug addict junkie. And, you know, so it was the right timing. I got to believe it's a lot of part of it was God's work, you know?
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about this film, and that's why it's we can recommend it and say it is called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts, because it is the journey that you two to get Jake his life back and to, I mean, the triumphant conclusion of him being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame with an organization that basically had forgotten about you, had written you off, didn't want to have anything to do with you, Jake.
Can't blame him.
Had to be one of the happiest nights of your whole life.
It was incredible, man. You know, I had some of my children there, and then I had my hero there, my heroes. I got some twins that came into the world at 1.8 and 1.11.
Wow.
And they've got so many issues to fight through, and they're still fighting. They won't give up. And each day they beat another record, you know, and they inspire me. And Arthur inspired me to get me going. When I seen that, I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, and it just pissed me off enough to try. And then I lost like 15, 20 pounds. And that was such an eye-opening and such a spark for me.
Just making that progress?
I couldn't believe it. I actually did something positive without even trying.
Yeah.
I just got off the gluten and the dairy.
And then you get to 2 months sober, and that just seems like a day you never thought you'd see.
Well,
of course, there were setbacks along the way.
There were like four or five falls, and, you know, I'll take those gladly now, man, because I'm clean now 2 years.
2 years.
I feel freaking awesome. I traveled to L.A. on my own. I went through Detroit, my favorite strip club city, and I didn't even go.
Apologies to them.
Yeah.
Hey, they still got to make a living.
Right?
There are a lot of sad strippers in Detroit, thanks to you.
It was Sunday. They were closed. That's the only reason I didn't go.
Dallas, let me ask you, how did you develop this yoga plan that is helping so many people? Where did that come from in your life?
Well, again, I just started wrestling when I was 35. My career took off when I was 40, and that was in 96, and I was on top of the world, man, 97 and 98. I mean, I was in 13 out of 24 main events or semi-main events for pay-per-view. So I was living that life in 270-plus days a year in the ring, bouncing around. And at some point, you know, it was a straw. It wasn't one bump. It was the straw that broke the camel's back. And next thing you know, I got three of the top specialists in the world telling me, no, dude, you're done. And I just signed a multi-million-dollar three-year deal. And you also got to understand, I am that guy who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga the first 42 years. But, you know, I'm that guy, you know. But at that point, I'm also open-minded when you're telling me my multi-million-dollar contract. I never got paid up till that point. It was going away. I'll try anything. And it was very lucky that I did. And within 3 weeks of just doing some power yoga and trying to figure out the modifications, I started to feel a difference. And, you know, I'm still doing rehab. I've rehabbed both shoulder surgeries, both knees. So I know a lot about rehab and breaking up scar tissue. So one night before I go to bed, I just started doing those yoga positions and mixed them with the rehabilitation. And then that really flowed great. And then I added an old school calisthenics and something like Jake said, he ended up losing like 65 pounds total or 70 pounds total during the journey, you know, during that journey. But the reason why you can do that, that makes DDP yoga different than any other kind of yoga, is dynamic resistance. And what I do is I get you engaging and flexing muscles like you're lifting weights, but with no weight there. And what happens is every time you flex or engage a muscle, your heart has to beat faster to get the blood to the muscle. So completely by accident, bro, and I mean completely by accident, I develop a workout today known as DDP yoga that's kick-ass cardio that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like never before with minimal joint impact. That's why Jake could do it. That's why the disabled veteran could do it. That's why Scott Hall, when you're so beat up, you just need to get some movement going in the beginning. And once you understand the dynamic resistance, well, now you're not just stretching muscles. You're stretching and strengthening muscles, ligaments, and tendons. And that's why there's a turnaround.
Well, I would feel like I were listening to an infomercial right now if I hadn't seen this work with my own eyes in the movie. I mean, it is really incredible, the stuff you do. And the other thing that's amazing about you, Dallas, is you have the personality to be able to be firm but also encouraging. And that's got to be a fine line to walk, because there must be times where you feel like you want to give up on people, but you never, ever do, and you always seem to know the right thing to say, and I was so impressed by that with you.
Well, from my side, he is so positive, it makes you sick.
Okay.
It's like in Dallas, has anybody ever take a crap in your milk? You know, come on. You know. But he's positive, and he does it with love, man. And
Dallas, you don't give up on anybody, right?
No, he won't, man.
Is that what made the difference for you, Jake?
Yeah,
is it
did,
just that
man.
He that
yeah,
the, not getting
he,
up
the way that he handled me, man. He had kid gloves on when he needed to, But when he didn't need to, he was right there in my face. And yeah. You see it in the movie, you know. And well, not only him, but Steve, you had to get in my face a couple of times, which kind of surprised me because he's just a little short Chinese guy. He's going to kick my butt when I walk out. But
it's an inspirational movie, particularly for anyone who has ever dealt with addiction or absolutely. Had friends or family in addiction. I mean, it really is something that is absolutely worth seeing. It's a fascinating story. It has very little to do with wrestling. It really has to do with us as humans.
Well, it's a fight. It's a fight. You know, for me, I just hope the people, when they come to see it, they understand addiction a little bit better. And the second thing I hope they get is Dallas's end of it. You know, we all know somebody, whether it be family members or a friend, that we've written off, that we've given up on, that we avoid, that we hang up the phone because we know they're trouble. They're going to rob me, whatever. We know what they are. But do you really want to watch them die?
Right.
You know, we need to remember that part.
ArcLight, Culver City, ArcLightCinemas.com. Dallas, I know that you're trying to fly out here to be at the thing tonight. How's that looking right now?
Not good. It's
not good.
Have you ever had a kidney stone?
No, but we've heard from friends that it's the most painful thing a man will ever go through.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, my mother-in-law was there with me in the hospital, and she's had five kids. And I was like, so everybody says about, you know, it's like childbirth. And I said, and she had just had one like 2 weeks ago. And I said to her, I said, Kay, what's more painful? And she looked at me, and she didn't miss a beat. She said, kidney stone, hands down.
Wow. Why don't you have a baby and say that, Dallas?
I'm not saying it. She said it.
I know.
Well, listen, I hope you get past that, man. I hope you recover real soon.
I hope that passes. See how I did that?
Dallas, thanks for jumping on the phone, man. Your movie was great, and thanks for the good work. What's the website real quick if people want more information about your yoga?
You know, DDP Yoga. I don't ever call it yoga. DDP Yoga.com. But the main thing I want people to hear is a lot of people are going to be listening to this, and those shows are mostly all sold out. There's one more show they added for the movie tonight. And so a lot of people aren't going to see it, but now really want to. Go to JakeTheSnakeMovie.com. And if you sign up there, we got a registration there. If you do, you'll know when the movie might be coming back again, coming to VOD, coming to DVD. And we're looking at doing the whole VOD thing at around Christmas time. So I would love to come back on with you guys and talk about this again right before we do that.
We would love to do that as well because we watched it, and it is great and
really
inspirational.
Is. Thanks, Dallas.
Thank you, guys.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, bro. Thank you, man. It's awesome just being here. And again, man, if you're one of those guys out there like I was, it don't have to go down like this, man. Reach out for some help. If you want to come to the movie and talk to me tonight, I'll be glad to spend some time with you and try to get you pointed in the right direction, man.
That's a great message, sir. Take care of yourself. We'll do it again soon.
Indeed.
Beer mug does it again. Ladies and gentlemen, another weekend, another $10,000 made driving Uber. Am I right, Muggs?
Oh, so much money, I'm rolling in it. Like Scrooge McDuck.
I'm sorry?
when did you start your Uber career?
Let's see. My Uber career started way back in June.
Okay. It wasn't that long ago,
right,
but okay.
Right.
And that's when was the last time you actually drove an Uber?
Way back in August.
early August.
Yeah, early August. Yeah. I just remember when you came in, you're like, guys, I got it. This is it. I'm off most of the hours of the day. I'm going to be working so hard, driving Uber, making so much money. My life plan is coming together. And then nothing.
Well,
nothing.
Not because I'm not motivated and I'm a go-getter. It's because...
Right.
It's because some things have been getting in the way, you know, extracurricular activities outside of work. Like, you know, I had the sticker hit thing, and then...
And that was weeks ago.
And then you went swimming like that one day.
Yeah, I had swimming. To go swimming, you know. Physical fitness is important
to me.
You
wanted to smoke
pot and
watch
fitness is important to me, he just said. Come on.
There was another day where you just decided to smoke pot and watch Chips reruns all day.
Terrible show, but yes, I did smoke pot.
Pot may be your enemy.
I think it is. That's why I'm quitting for a year.
Yeah, sure. When?
After my birthday.
Oh, after your birthday.
After my birthday.
Okay.
Well, lately we've been hearing a spot that's been running from the fine people at Uber talking about all the ways you can make some money. Here's a little taste of that.
We've been hearing a lot about Uber lately, so we decided to get out there and talk to some actual Uber partners.
Is signing up to drive with Uber really hard?
It was simple and easy.
So if you have a phone, you can just sign up and earn money?
You just open the app whenever you feel like driving.
Sign up, drive, and you make some money.
Boom. Sign up, drive, make some money. I understand Beer Mug has made his own commercial that's going to be running soon to try to enlist other Uber drivers.
We've been hearing a lot about Uber lately, so we thought we'd get out there and talk to some actual Uber partners. We talked to Beer Mug. What's your experience been?
This is the best job I've ever had.
How much money have you made driving Uber?
Well, none yet. In fact, I'm out of pocket for insurance and I bought a new car, but I'm going to be raking it in soon.
What's the best thing about being an Uber partner?
I make my own hours. I'm my own boss.
How many hours a week do you drive for Uber?
Well, I was going to drive some this week, but I had to go swimming. And then, you know, I had to recharge my batteries from all the other things that I do. But I can't wait to get out there and be an Uber partner.
Is it hard to make money with Uber?
I wouldn't really know. I haven't really dedicated much time to it, but I've heard good things.
What do you need to do to become an Uber partner?
I'm not quite sure. I'm really just an Uber partner just in theory. But I can't wait to do it and do all the things people who do Uber, the partners of Uber do.
Would you consider your career with Uber to be a success?
100%. I've never been happier.
Well, there you have it. That was Beer Mug, an actual Uber partner. And in retrospect, maybe a bad choice for a commercial.
6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. It is 7:10.
I think this is a little embarrassing that the great Tony Hale is on his way down here to be in the studio in a few minutes, and he's probably listening to our most embarrassing moments right now.
But think how it will fill him with confidence, knowing that he can't possibly be any worse than we are.
Plus, we'll get a chance to take it back, thereby erasing it from history. Is that
okay?
How it works?
Nope. I'm not sure.
Would you like to take that back? Would you like to take that back? Tell me, would you, if you could, you would you, could you take that back? Would you like to take that back? Would you like to take that back? Tell me, would you, if you could, you would you, could you take that back?
We say a lot of things on live radio off the top of our heads that perhaps are ill-advised if we had a chance to think about it a little bit. And that's what this feature is all about. In fact, we learned in the meeting yesterday after the show that we say a lot more things that we're not supposed to say than we even knew.
And we don't even take those back.
Right. But this is an opportunity for us to play back the audio and go around the room and see who wants to maybe have a second pass at whatever was said the first time around.
The first person that might want to take it back is Ralph.
What?
Also, Fernando Sosa. Who you may not know the name, but he's the guy who has created the Donald Trump butt plug.
Yeah!
I wonder if he hears the drums.
Okay, let's put that right in the file. And call it a day.
Would you like to take that back?
So your joke...
Do you hear the drums, Fernando? Is
right,
the joke.
Your joke is you were making an ABBA lyric joke from 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the question we're asking now is, would you like to take that?
Would you like to take that back?
Yeah, I would like to take that.
Okay.
Back.
I'm so happy.
I'd like to pass on that.
Next is Allie.
Huh.
Hard to believe.
Who is outraged? Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to set this one up. Ralph is talking in the showbiz story about Amy Schumer and the photo shoot with C-3PO and R2-D2. And some Star Wars fans are outraged.
Who is outraged?
Well,
if you are a Star Wars fan and you were outraged because Amy Schumer was in bed with C-3PO and R2-D2, you need to take yourself out of the game.
Take yourself out.
I think a lot of people just thought her hand was in Alderaan places.
Oh, man.
No?
This is why you fail.
Oh. Would you like to take that back?
Hell no.
Wow.
Would you like to take that back?
Come on. Alderaan places, because her hand was like touching C-3PO and weird places, but I said Alderaan.
Would you like to take that back?
See.
I'm proud of you, Allie. I thought that was excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad you're standing by.
Thank you.
Huh, surprised.
Connected at the hip.
Next is Ralph again.
Come on.
We were talking about Whitney Houston's Will,
oh.
And later in the conversation, Bean explains that he used to love Dionne Warwick, but now he hates her because she was on Celebrity Apprentice and she was heinous, he said.
Wow.
So that is why he hates on her in this particular clip.
No, Will, the estate would be divided among Whitney's
living relatives, so who knows how many that entails or who's going to get what slice of the pie, but I bet you it's going to get ugly.
Don't give any of that bitch Dionne Warwick, I'll tell you that.
Wow.
What just happened?
Not what friends are for, right there. That kind of behavior, I'll tell you that much.
Would you like to take that back?
Oh, come on. No way. That was sweet. That was delicious.
That at least was a reference from a song from 1985. This
listen,
time around.
Hey, you're working listen. Your way up.
Hey, hey, minor from the 1800s. I don't want to hear about timely references from you. Of all
I just,
people.
I feel like it needs to be pointed out while you decide whether you're going to take it back or not.
I would you like to take that? You brought up Dionne Warwick, a star from the 1960s,
who was on Celebrity Apprentice 2 years ago.
Well,
though.
If she's fair game, then her auteur is also fair game.
I don't know that word, but okay, let's move on.
So that's a no?
I'm not taking it back.
Next is Ralph and Allie.
Come on!
I think it's Ralph and Allie. I'm not positive about Allie, but I know it's Ralph.
Programming note, Spandau Ballet is performing today live on The Talk.
Is that true?
Yes. I know this much is true.
Those people...
Wow. What's happening right now?
We're going to have to do... Or would you like to take that back just from this showbiz alone?
Would you like to take that back?
That was one for you, right? Allie, did you mean it?
I did say true because of
because
the
song. That's his song title?
Sure.
Okay, so.
Would you like to take that back?
But then.
Hold on.
Okay.
Allie?
No, because it perfectly set him up.
But it wasn't
and
even.
You knew that.
But it what? Oh, stop it.
Ralph? I'm not taking my back because I took her bad and made it good.
Oh, screw you.
I took her.
Screw you.
I took her sow's ear and made it into a silk purse. That's what I did.
Not that anyone cares about my opinion on this, but I agree with Ralph. I think Ralph perfected what Allie was trying to do. She had a weak-ass true, and then Ralph brought it home with I know this much is true, which is a much better joke.
So right. Ralph's not taking it back, but Allie.
Would you like to take that back?
I hate all of you.
That is not an answer.
Oh, it's not? No?
No.
Fine, I'll take it back if it makes you feel better.
That's the right thing to do.
We were talking about Bono and his new cause, which is helping people with eye care. And this is Allie.
Bono said, thanks to good medical care, my eyes are okay, but tens of millions of people around the world with sight problems don't have access to glasses or even a basic eye test. So this is his new cause.
Wow. For a guy that still hasn't found what he's looking for, I'm kind of impressed.
Mother of God.
That was just
what Chip said.
Would you like to take that back?
I wanted to bring up, too, that Chip has never spoken without being spoken to.
No, that was a little just, mouse of a person.
She just could not contain herself. So, Alan.
Would you like to take that back? Would you like to take that back?
No.
I don't
No again?
I don't want to.
But no. You know it. But you know it's the right
but
thing
I
to do.
But I should. So yes.
So you do. Okay.
Oh, there we go. Finally, a breakthrough.
Ralph is doing a story on the animated TV series The Lion King, and he was talking about Mufasa. And this one, people is being
James Earl Jones will be back as Mufasa.
All right.
Isn't he dead? Spoilers. Isn't he dying this thing? He'll be like Ghost Mufasa, I guess.
Simba, you must go and protect the jungle.
Who's playing the dentist? Does it say?
I'm sorry, what?
The dentist.
The dentist. I didn't get it. Okay.
There's a story recently about a dentist who went and killed a lion in Africa. And made a lot of
this is a headline. Cecil the lion.
Just around. Just saying, wow. Dentist lion. You know, because if
wow,
I'll show myself out.
Wow!
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 Wow! That happened.
Wow.
Would you like to take that back?
I don't think we're giving you an option. I think this has to be taken
Look,
back.
Look, I already took it back. I said I'll show myself out. Yeah, it was a miss. We were talking about the Lion King, and it was right after the Minnesota dentist story had happened, and I thought they would go together, and they just didn't. So
they didn't at all, though, right?
I apologize.
Okay, that was terrible,
to the world,
right?
To the world. It was bad. Yeah.
All right, one
it
last.
Shouldn't have been said.
One last one. You remember Hitchbot? Oh, I miss Hitchbot.
Oh.
Hitchbot
Those
was
are the good old days.
It was a social experiment where some people built a robot that the plan was it was going to go across the United States hitchhiking based on the kindness of strangers. But it only made it about a couple hundred miles before it met a fiery death in Philadelphia. And Hitchbot is dead. But why do you bring that up?
Well, we talked to Hitchbot before his untimely death, and he made this joke.
Well, once you do get in the car, what are the conversations like?
I usually say, hello, I am Hitchbot. Okay. You can call me Alfred. Alfred Hitchbot.
Hold on a second. Do we have to put Hitchbot in the file? Really? Put Hitchbot in the file.
Would you like to take that back?
So, hey, Hitchbot. Apparently Hitchbot is not dead, and we've got him on the phone.
I am not dead.
That's good news.
What about the question?
I was a bucket with a face painted on it. I'm not a real thing.
Ah.
That's why I'm not dead, because I was never alive. So get over it, dumbasses.
Okay, we were told you were dismembered in Philadelphia, though, that you were taken apart by some people.
Not real. Just a bucket with a phone in it and some rubber gloves and some pipe cleaners. Everyone stop it.
What about Hitchbot, but you can call me Alfred, though? Would you like to take that back, Hitchbot?
Would you like to take that back?
Hell no.
All right, stand by it.
All right. Good enough. Thank you.
I'm Alfred Hitchbot.
Yes, you are.
Yesterday, Chris Martin from the band Coldplay stopped by. I had a great chat with him throughout most of the 9 o'clock hour. You can see that video. It is up at krock.com if you want to. It's a lot of fun. Coldplay's in town, of course, playing a private show at the Belasco Theater in Los Angeles this Friday night. You cannot buy tickets, but you can win them from KROQ all week long, including right now. 1-800-520-1067. If you're a Coldplay fan and you know their music, call now. I'll give you a chance to earn those tickets coming up in about 10 minutes.
So Starbucks hates Christmas.
They hate Jesus, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And that's based on a cup?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Let's go to the clip.
For millions of coffee drinkers, the arrival of Starbucks holiday-themed cups means Christmas is on the way.
It's huge. People who don't even go to Starbucks regularly, they come during the holidays because we have the red cups.
But some critics say the image of this year's holiday cup was like waking up to a lump of coal Christmas morning. Unlike previous years, when the cups came adorned with holiday-inspired images, ranging from snowmen to ornaments, this year's design is just a plain red cup.
It doesn't give me, like, the, wow, it's Christmas, you know what I mean?
The topic percolated on social media, where evangelical groups...
Sure.
Can you stop?
Yeah. Some pretty smart people being interviewed.
You don't have to put everyone you interview in the clip on the news, right? They know that.
No, but they're using the right ones here.
All right, and my other question is, do you accept as fact that people who don't even go to Starbucks...
Mm-mm. Not even a little bit.
Nope. ...will go at the holidays because they want to get those red cups?
Nope. One single person.
Yeah, because I don't... It seems like he just threw that out there. We're just supposed to say, okay, all right, it's on the news.
It doesn't give me, like, the, wow, it's Christmas, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The topic percolated on social media, where evangelical groups accuse the company of waging a war on Christmas.
Do you realize that Starbucks wanted to take Christ and Christmas off of their brand new cups? That's why they're just plain red.
On Thursday, former pastor John Feuerstein posted this video to his Facebook page.
When I went in and I asked for my coffee, they asked for my name, and I told them my name is Merry Christmas. So guess what, Starbucks? I tricked you into putting Merry Christmas on your cup.
Boom. Well,
boom.
Drop the mic. Drop the mic indeed. Allie, your question about Mr. Joshua Feuerstein.
It doesn't sound like maybe your most evangelical name. I would think he was a Jewish man.
Yes, it is a little bit of a surprise, isn't it? But he is rabid about this, as are many others who are fighting the war on Christmas, including our next guest who joins us on the phone. He is the Reverend Carl Hollybrook, and he is with a group called Christmas Defenders. Reverend, thanks so much for your time this morning, sir.
Good morning. How are y'all today?
We are very good. How are you?
I am fine, and it's a pleasure to be speaking with you on your radio program.
Now, do you believe, sir, as others do, that Starbucks is fighting a war on Christmas?
Oh, absolutely. They are fighting a war on Jesus himself, because obviously they hate Jesus and they hate Christmas. And I, for one, as a warrior of God, will not allow this to stand.
What is it you're basing they hate Jesus on? The cup is red and green. Those are pretty traditional holiday colors.
I beg to differ, sir. If you look at the cup, it is not red and green. It is simply red.
Okay.
Who wears red all the time? Satan does.
Right, but the
Satan
green...
wears a suit made out of red cloth. Probably. No one knows. But I tell you that the cup also has a cloven hoof.
What? A cloven hoof? What are you talking about?
The bottom of the cup kind of looks like a hoof. Doesn't look like a hand or a foot, so I'm guessing hoof.
Well, I think
let's just call it a hoof.
You're stretching there. But the green is the Starbucks logo that's right in the middle of the red, giving it a festive holiday appearance. But your complaint is that they don't literally have the baby Jesus anywhere on the cup?
Listen to me, sir, and I have you know, as a member of the clergy and a theologian, it is well known that a religion that has lasted well over two millennia in no way can withstand an insulated cup. This will be the downfall of Christianity as we know it because it's a coffee cup. And everyone knows, first of all, everyone knows that people go to Starbucks that don't even drink coffee just to get the cup to celebrate the holiday season.
Yeah, I don't think we buy that.
Oh, well, it's true. It is true because before this evil cup of Satan, the cups on Starbucks used to have all Jesus-themed pictures like snowmen and ice skaters.
What is that? Snowflakes
and ornaments.
The pictures they used to use had nothing to do with Jesus.
I beg to differ. Everybody knows, as a boy,
Jesus
loved to make a snowman. In fact, he used to make them come to life. And his little sister would say, "Do you want to build a snowman?"
I think that's just
frozen. And he had magic powers that would make a snowman come to life. And one was named Olaf. And he, as you know, was one of the disciples.
Reverend, that's a Disney movie called Frozen.
Who's the Reverend?
You.
Well, I mean, you are.
And Jesus loved ice skating in Galilee. When the Sea of Galilee would freeze over, he would put on his skates.
Like a Hans
Brinker Anderson. He'd be out there just skating around doing pirouettes and figure
eights. None of that happened.
And sow cows.
Whoa, triple sow cows.
Yeah, of course he could do a triple sow cow. He was Jesus.
But what about this, Reverend? What about the fact that Starbucks sells a Christmas blend coffee? They sell Advent calendars with Christmas all over it. It's hardly like they're distancing themselves from the holiday at all.
Listen to me and mark my words. I don't care what kind of Christmas blend coffee they sell. Okay. I don't care about their Advent calendars. Unless they put a damn snowman on their cups, Christianity as we know it will cease to exist.
Reverend, can I ask you, if I'm going in and I have them write my name as Merry Christmas, I'm not really proving a point. I've just supported their coffee. I've just given them money.
But you're tricking them. Then the cup says Merry Christmas on it.
But I just gave them money. And if I'm boycotting or protesting, shouldn't I just not go there?
But the cup says Merry Christmas on it.
Right.
Okay.
I think you're missing the point.
It just doesn't seem like much of a burn.
It is, because then you've got a cup that says Merry Christmas on it.
Right.
And Satan cries.
I didn't realize that.
Yes, he cries. And when he cries, it's fascinating because his body's hot. And so just like a little steam comes off his face.
Tell us more about that.
All right, we all have a mission today, guys.
Make Satan cry.
I love them so much.
Is that Death Cab?
Yep.
That should be Kevin's theme song. I don't know why. We'll put that on a T-shirt for him.
Hey, welcome to Kevin and Beecher here on a Monday morning. Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network next hour. Holly Holm is in studio talking UFC 193. She'll be leaving for Australia here pretty soon to go fight Ronda Rousey. Also, Melissa Benoit, that girl who plays Supergirl, will be joining us too. That's all coming up on K-Rock.
What's her name? I'm sorry, what's her name?
Melissa Benoit.
There you go.
There you go.
Is that close?
Yep.
Okay.
Took a little time, Strokey, but you got there. God bless.
Friday, we were talking about something after the show that Allie and I found delightful. And the Grinches in the room, Kevin and Ralph, thought was stupid. It's stupid.
I'm not buying it.
And that is, it has often been said that every person on Earth, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I want to believe it's true, every person on Earth has an exact doppelganger. A person that looks like your twin is out there. You just have to find that person.
Wait, do you think that's true of everybody?
No, I think true of a lot of people. Okay. But let's face it, most of us will never meet most of the people in the world, so we won't have them. And that's why I was excited to find out that there is a website called Twin Strangers where you can go on, upload a photo, give some information, and try to find the person in the world that looks just like you. Now, why wouldn't you want to find that person?
Because who cares?
All right, let's follow this through. So you find that person, Bean, and you get his email or phone number or something. Then you call him.
Uh-huh.
And you said, "Hey, you look just like me." And he goes, "You look just like me."
All right, see ya.
And then you go, "How's it going?" And
so
he goes, "Fine."
Happened.
And then you're out. There's nowhere to go from there. I feel like it would be super fun to hang out with that person. I feel like there would be hilarity would ensue if you were able to hang out with your twin.
Because you look alike?
Yes, because you look alike.
That would be fun.
All right.
Here's so that, that person's going to be great. Good times, just because they look like you.
You don't mean all the pranks he would pull if that was the case.
Oh, sure. Well, he can't stop with all his punkin'.
Here's the, and by the way, before we talk about why this is in the news at all, Allie, your thoughts, please.
I think it's delightful to be able to sit across from someone that looks just like you, have a beer, and be like, wow.
Oh, the height of narcissism. What could be better?
It's not narcissism. It's just fun. Can't something just fun. Be fun,
but
Ralph?
Right. All right. Doesn't have to be deeper than that.
I have tons of fun in my life.
Name
I need
three
to go on
things.
A website and hunt down someone who looks like me so I can spend time with them. Oh, yeah, I can't forget why I can't do that. Oh, I have a life.
But you can have a life that could also include a twin.
Who gives a rat's ass?
Hey, Bean, it isn't a twin, though.
Right.
But it might as well be if it looks
no,
that much like you.
It's not a all twin. Right. That's that would involve a family connection.
So here's why this is in the news. There's a photo that went crazy at the end of last week online of a guy who gets on a plane. I think he's leaving from London and he's flying on Ryanair to Ireland. He sits down on the flight and the guy who's in the seat next to him looks like his identical twin. I mean, crazy doppelganger.
Right.
And Kevin, you saw the photo and you said,
not buying it. I'm just not buying it.
Well, that's a whole new
I'm
level.
I'm just not buying it. I'm not buying
Everybody
it.
In this room is nuts. So that's a whole new level of
so
weird.
So there's a doppelganger. What are the chances you're ever going to meet them, let alone be on the same flight, let alone sit next to each other?
Of course, it's a crazy coincidence.
Not buying it.
You don't
but
believe it's
you
real?
Not buy it?
Come
it,
on.
It happened.
It happened. It's real.
You don't know that it happened just because it's on this piece of paper? I'm not buying it.
Oh, so the photograph is doctored?
Sure.
What are you, that's some kind of conspiracy theorist? Two guys run a plane who looked alike. How can you not buy that? But how this, is that the height of conspiracy?
But this alike, that much
right.
alike.
Wow. Okay. That's, you know what it is? That's
not
a,
buying it.
That's a, huh. Okay. And then you move on. It's not a, oh, I don't buy it, or a, oh, it'd be amazingly fun. It's neither of those.
Heat's off us, Bean.
Kevin, what do you think is happening here? What do you think is happening here if this isn't just a crazy coincidence that two guys who look identical sat down next to each other on a plane? Tell me what your alternate theory is.
Brothers and or friends want to get their picture out and get it to go viral. So they just say, hey, we randomly met. Why is that so out of...
Because,
why is that not a possibility?
Because what's a vast conspiracy. What's the upside for them? What do they get? Other
they
than
get
having
the
their
fame
picture
of
on
having
the internet.
Their picture, you know, passed around and become sort of internet famous. A lot of people are into that. A lot of people do that.
So weird.
So that's where they go. They go to the effort of that rather than just happening. It's more likely in your mind that two guys got together and plotted this out and spent all the time and energy putting that together. That's more likely in your opinion.
About 50% of the time when I get yelled at for this, it turns out to be not true, by the way. I'm right about half the time when I'm
Kevin.
Talking
So because
like this.
You're right other times, you're saying you're right this
I'm
time.
I'm saying there's a possibility. Absolutely.
Kevin, there's no possibility.
What if they run the website?
Oh, what if it's goodfaders.com?
Oh,
all right. All right. Allie,
what if
you
think it'd be amazingly fun to sit across the table and have a beer with someone who looks just like them?
Allie, you went on Twin Strangers to find your twin. How'd it go?
I did. I made an account, even, where you upload two pictures, but then it gets weird because you don't get...
Oh, then it gets weird.
That's when it gets weird?
Right. Not
you
that you took the time to do it.
You don't get matched according to your picture. You have to answer questions about your face shape. You pick which face shape. I have a longer face. Click. What are your lips like? Do
Wait,
you have
don't
a
you
Cupid's
just put
bow?
Up a...
No.
You
that's
don't put up
the...
a picture at all.
No, you put up... you do. You put up two pictures, but then it takes you through these questions... Face shape, lips, eyes, and you
so
have
I
to
would
click
say
on
see
that.
Picture, see picture.
That's what I thought. So then you get through all that, and then all of a sudden it goes, okay, boom, and all these pictures start appearing, and you click on whether it's a match or not a match. I don't know if I think I have a different face shape, eye shape, and lip shape than I really do, because these people look nothing like me.
Well, now that you explain it, it doesn't sound like a waste of time at all. Now that you've told me all the steps you go through, this seems like a worthwhile endeavor. Congratulations to you.
Allie, I hope you find your doppelganger.
Bean, did you put a picture up?
I haven't done it yet.
Will
I'm
you
very,
please?
I had a very
you did
busy
not have a busy weekend.
It. Well, it's my busiest weekend, as you know.
Yeah. Of course he didn't. Because
I didn't
it's
do
just
that.
All, wouldn't it be nice if it Bean planned?
Be awesome.
Wouldn't it be exciting and fun if, but there's never any excitement and there's never any fun because nothing ever gets done.
It's just a world of wishing. It just lives in a world of wishing.
I might go on the website. I might also just take a flight somewhere see if the guy is sitting next to me. Looks exactly like me.
Fly around the world waiting for your guy who looks like you to sit next to you.
You don't know, man.
Or you could just watch an episode of The Munsters and go, boom, it's me and Fred.